listening to the Progress Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
So for those of you listening on the audio, nothing is different. But for those of you that are on YouTube, obviously, as you can see, this is our first official Progress Your Health video podcast.
It certainly has been a long time coming. But today is actually your 50th birthday, which was actually our deadline, June 15th. We are going to do a video podcast and then submit it to the world, which will probably go out a little bit after June 15th.
Yeah. We have some plans for the later in the year. So we have a couple of deadlines. So it just so happened that, and maybe because it was my birthday, that we decided, hey, we're going to record it no matter what. We're going to get it done on the 15th. And then the next coming week, which will be probably by June 20th or something, or even a little earlier, then this will be live as of then. So in our first official YouTube channel launch at that point. So exciting. You know, we'll see how it goes. Our format's not going to change too much. We're still going to be answering questions. The one we have for today is from Hannah. It's a, at least from our practice standpoint, this is a type of situation that we deal with on a fairly regular basis.
And I'll go ahead and read the question, but you're absolutely right. This is a very common concern. Unfortunately, it isn't always addressed because it's a little bit of a, I don't know, what would you call it? Like a delicate situation.
Well, we'll get into the question in a minute. Why don't you go ahead and read it and we'll talk about why we think those, why this is a little bit harder to deal with. We think it's a fairly easy one to deal with, but she's having some struggles. So go ahead and read the question from Hannah.
So this is from Hannah. Hi, Dr. Davidson and Dr. Mackey. I'm told to keep using my Premarin cream. I was initially on estradiol 0.01% and changed to Premarin. I do not want to take PremPro. I have used it for years with no improvement for my atrophic vaginitis and dysuria. I continue to get urinary tract infections. And as an OR nurse, I cannot drink water in the operating room as it is a risk to sterility. So I become water deficient and I get urgency and I cannot leave the OR in the middle of a case. Sometimes cases can go on as long as 5 hours or more. Furthermore, I am a 52-year-old woman and post-menopause. I became menopausal in 2015. The skin on my face and neck are sagging, making wrinkles more pronounced. My vulva has become looser and sagging. I cannot perform sexually because I cannot get aroused during clitoral stimulation because it is so dry down there. Lube does not help. I am very frustrated by this, as is my husband. I get anxious as well because my mind is constantly worried about the atrophy and the vulvitis. I'm going to a specialist. They are very conservative in their treatment. My husband doesn't understand. He continues to ask, and I just say, my vagina is broken. Can you please help me?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there. very interesting for our, it's easy to say some of those things on audio, but when you got a camera in front of you, it's a little bit more challenging. She said she's going to a specialist, but I think she needs to find another specialist, to be perfectly honest. Now, she does work in a hospital. She's an OR nurse. So that means she's probably going to somewhat of a conventionally minded physician that is using sort of outdated, a little bit of archaic sort of tools to help her with the situation.
And when it comes to menopause, everybody is different. Everybody's health goals, everybody's, you know, what they want to happen is different for everyone. That's why treating somebody in perimenopause and menopause really needs to be very as an individual-based kind of therapy treatment. So looking at this one, which is really actually very common in menopause, is Hannah's having some vaginal atrophy, which is very common in postmenopause and in menopause. And then she's also getting frequent urinary tract infections. And then she's also having trouble with intercourse, probably from the atrophy and the dryness. But then at the same time, she also says she's not getting aroused. So this is a super common situation. Unfortunately, sometimes it's really kind of delicate to talk about things that are happening down south.
Yeah, I think that this is becoming more and more, there's a lot more awareness about this. So women, I think, are feeling more, maybe they're a little bit more frustrated or not having their problems solved. So it's pushing them to be more vocal about it. But you and I, like I said, we come across these things all the time. Now, it's interesting, though, she's only 52, but she says she's been in menopause since 2015, which as of 2024, that had been 9 years ago. So according to her, she's been in menopause since she was, 43?
Yeah, from her early 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a little strange to me why she would have gone into menopause so early. Usually for most women, women we deal with are usually in perimenopause, then not full-blown menopause. So that's a little interesting part. But the further away she is from her actual menstrual history, then, you know, that atrophy becomes a little bit more pronounced over time.
Well, with the vaginal cells, so like you're saying, perhaps she might have been in perimenopause in her early 40s and then transitioned to menopause. You know, the average age of menopause is 51 and a half, which that's where I'm at.
Yeah, yeah. I'm 50 today and you're 50. You turned, so I'm June 15th and you're April 15th. So you're 51, I'm 50. So we have the same birthday, not the same birth month or year, but the same birthday.
Yep, number 15.
Yeah, yeah.
But in any case, the vaginal tissues are very much primed by estrogen. So when you go through menopause and that estrogen declines, that causes those vaginal cells to become more immature vaginal cells. So if she went and had a pap smear, what it would say on that report would be predominantly parabasal cells, because parabasal cells are immature vaginal cells. When you add estrogen to a parabasal cell, it matures it. So having predominantly parabasal cells is going to cause that vaginal atrophy, lack of lubrication. The cells become a little bit more tender. The tissue resiliency isn't there. The nerve stimulation isn't as present. So that's where this is really common in menopause. But I do think, like Dr. Mackey said, that it is being talked about more. Now, when I first went into practice in 2004, it wasn't talked about very much. But now I do feel like there's a lot more advocacy to it.
Well, social media, it's all over social media, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, it's all over the place. Now, what she's been given or what she's been prescribed, that's where sort of the approach sort of starts to diverge a little bit. Very common problem. Now it's what GUS or genital urinary syndrome
of menopause
that encompasses a lot GSM. Of things.
GUS.
Yeah. A wolf.
It's a new term.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's heard it by now. That's sort of only been in the last few years that they've used that term. But now they're sort of combining the vaginal issues with the urinary issues kind of into one particular kind of umbrella term for the most part.
Yeah. So like I was saying, when that estrogen declines in menopause, which is a natural state, every female goes through menopause. When those the ovaries, the estrogen and progesterone start, or cease being made in the ovaries, is you do see that vaginal atrophy, but at the same time, that vaginal vault has its own microbiome. Just like we have an oral microbiome, we have a gut microbiome, which is, everybody talks about, it's very popular. You actually have a vaginal vault microbiome. So when that estrogen drops and you have predominantly parabasal cells, that can also set you up for getting chronic yeast infections, bacterial vaginitis, and also the urinary tract infections.
Yeah, and it seems like, do you think her UTIs, most of the time a woman's going to get a UTI from intercourse, but it seems like hers is happening actually from the treatment that she's using.
Possibly, but as she's saying too, if you're not very hydrated and you're holding your urine, and I mean, 5 hours, that's a long time. I don't even know if I could hold it for 5 hours. So
you could not. You go to the bathroom all the time. you could not hold it for 5 hours.
So props to Hannah.
We should try that sometime, because you could not work in an ER because you'd have to go to the bathroom so much. They just kick you out because you'd have to go to the bathroom so often. You could not hold it for 5 hours. That's really funny.
But like I said,
not funny for her. Not funny for her. I mean, I'm sure she's in a lot of distress, but. Thinking about you holding it for 5 hours
makes you laugh.
Yeah, because you can't. You cannot. Especially when we're in the car, then you immediately have to go to the bathroom the minute we're in the car. Anyways.
But like you were saying, the treatment could possibly create a UTI, because sometimes the treatments can change that vaginal microbiome. But at the same time, holding your urine for a long time and you're dehydrated can also cause a urinary tract infection. So with the urinary tract infection, it's usually commonly E. coli, which E. coli crawls up the urethral, your urethra to get into the bladder, create that urinary tract infection. Now, urinary tract infection, as everybody knows, if you don't treat it and you let it keep going, it can cause a kidney infection, which is very painful.
Yeah, Hannah also has to be careful. If she's getting reoccurring UTIs, you cannot continue to use multiple courses of antibiotics, because as you said, it'll disrupt the, I'm not sure how many she's had in a row. She's insane about antibiotics, but if she's getting a UTI, they're prescribing her antibiotics, which then creates a vicious cycle. And now she's getting a UTI, every month. Mm-hmm. And then that just promotes more and more infection, more and more antibiotics. And now the vaginal microbiome is just completely thrown off. And now she's, as she says, her vagina is broken at that point. This is sort of a big issue, right? It's affecting her husband, their intimacy. But from our perspective, this is a relatively, at least knocking on wood, anyways, this is a relatively simple problem to solve.
Yeah. So what Listeners, you probably have already heard us talk about estriol. So there's three different estrogens in our system. There's estrone, E1, you don't really use that so much for hormone replacement. There's estradiol, which is the strongest form of estrogen, E2. And that's, you know, great for the bones, it's great for the brain, it's great, you know, for hot flashes, for night sweats. But estradiol is very strong, and she had been mentioning that she's using an estradiol and she hasn't really seen any change. Now, estriol is E3, it's very much more gentle than estradiol. It certainly isn't as strong, but it is really nice for those superficial tissues. So such as the vaginal tissues. Here, Hannah's talking about her face. Now, what did she mention? That her face and neck are sagging. I'm sure Hannah is gorgeous and we're our worst critic. But, you know, estriol can be really nice for the actual superficial tissues of the face. I mean, I've used it probably, what am I, 51? I've probably used it since my late 30s.
Yeah, and that's an interesting, you know, kind of a side benefit. You use estriol vaginally, but the same exact cream can be used as a nighttime moisturizer to, you know, kind of, like you say, you're going to plump up these cells and you're going to plump up those cells. And it's sort of you're getting two for the price of one in some respects. You just need to use a little bit more cream. The face cream, you can use it pretty much every night before bed as your nighttime moisturizer. Where if you're using it vaginally in the beginning, what's the frequency you'd use it in the beginning? Let's say, you know, Hannah came in, she was a new patient for you. What would you do as an initial line of therapy?
So like I was saying earlier, everybody is different. Everybody should be treated as an individual. Now, Hannah she went through menopause a number of years ago. Now, someone going through menopause fairly recently, like myself, you know, you may use a different dose, a different frequency because it's fairly new. For her, this is going to take a little bit of time to reverse and correct. That I would definitely use the estriol probably every day for 7 to 10 days and then reduce it down to 3 nights a week.
Yeah, but the dosing, you know, you compared to her situation, quite a bit different. So her dosing might actually need to be a little higher. But we both know that by raising the dose, there's some potential issues that might come along with that by raising the dosage.
Well, that's the nice thing about estriol. Actually, I don't see a lot of contraindications. I'm always worrisome about using estradiol E2 vaginally, whether it's the Premarin cream or using, like she had mentioned, the estradiol, because it's so, like I was saying, it's so strong that it'll permeate through the tissues and actually go into the bloodstream. So if I've had women that have come into my office and they were using estradiol from perhaps another practitioner vaginally, even though they're not putting on any estradiol systemically, and then I test their blood and they have elevated levels of estradiol. It may not last that long using it that way, but I'm very super hesitant about using estradiol vaginally. One, because I don't want it to go into the system because I want to measure those levels in a postmenopausal female. And then two, you know, the vaginal tissues are very close to the uterus. Hannah most likely has a uterus. If you haven't had a hysterectomy, you're going to have a uterus. Having that estradiol so close to the uterus can cause that endometrial lining of the uterus to thicken up, which is a risk factor for uterine cancer. And at the same time, that can create spotting, that can create a period. So that's why I really like estriol. So as you were saying, honestly, between the dose, I don't really see too many contraindications. I might go a little higher, say for somebody like Hannah, a little bit higher on that dose. And especially since you're working on the urinary system, so I can get really into the weeds here, is the urinary system is also really, you know, the estriol can be very beneficial to that urethra. So for example, going through menopause, when that estrogen drops, it causes the urethra, that connection from the bladder to the outside world, to get a little bit lax, kind of like a loose elastic waistband that you washed a lot. It just gets a little bit loose. When it's a little loose, that can enable that E. coli to be able to crawl up that urethra to create a urinary tract infection. So using the estriol can actually tonify that urethra to help not only with urinary tract infections, but I use it a lot also with patients with stress urinary incontinence. I've seen some really good results with that.
Yeah, yeah. So one potential treatment can sort of solve not only her pain, her discomfort, her reoccurring UTIs, some of that, like you said, stress incontinence or urgency. I think there was one more thing, and the arousal piece, right? So that one thing can actually, you know, kind of hopefully get her going in the right direction. But like you said, because of the severity of her situation, time is really going to be the issue. It's just going to take, what would you say hypothetically in a situation like this?
You know, it could take, I've had women that have, you know, they couldn't even have penetration. You know, there was so much vaginal atrophy, and it does take time. You know, you just have to wait with time. I would say somebody like Hannah, it would probably take a good couple of months, but she would probably notice relief in the first 4 weeks. But in terms of probably more so, you know, those tissues with the pain with intercourse, that probably would take probably a couple of months.
Yeah. Within the first 30 days, she's going to notice a big difference. And then it's just going to be kind of fine tuning it within somewhere between the 3 to 6 month mark. By 6 months, she should be in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that, you know, things would have improved at least by 75-80%, if not even more, within 6 months. Within 3 months, at least 50%, if not more than that. I had a case like this a number of years ago. A patient was in her 70s, husband passed, met up with an old boyfriend or an old, you know, flame of some sort, reconnected. And you know, she was not, she didn't mince words. Let's just put it that way. She was having, you know, obviously some vaginal issues because she was in her 70s. And so we started with a dose that we normally start, took a little bit of time. And lo and behold, she was actually, you know, as you said, the penetration part was really challenging, really difficult. She was laughing about her and her partner that they're like, you know, like teenagers fumbling around trying to figure it out. But she's all proud. It took a little while, but then eventually they were able to do it. So Hannah certainly is not in her 70s. So if it can work for a woman that was in her early 70s at the time, I think Hannah would actually have a lot of success with the same basic treatment, treatment protocol.
And like you were talking about, well, maybe we should talk about the sex part a little bit. So female libido is actually pretty complicated. I wish there was a one-stop shop to help, you know, bring up a female libido.
Like a female sildenafil or Viagra. Doesn't really work that way.
Not exactly. So I do feel like when that estrogen drops, you know, there's that vaginal atrophy, that the nerve stimulation or that nerve sensitivity does go down. So by adding in that estriol, that could definitely help with that nerve sensitivity. But at the same time, you know, sex is so much about psychology that if somebody, you know, as a woman, and I've talked to a lot of women about this, is if they feel like sex is going to be painful, it does kind of turn off that arousal.
Well, she even says in here that she's constantly thinking about it. She's sort of anxious about it. That's just not going to create a good environment for, you know, intimate activity. Mm-hmm. It's almost going to do just the opposite because there's that thought in her mind and it's just going to create some, you know, like she says, some anxiety about it. And it's going to prevent her from, you know, becoming aroused in the proper way. So if you solve the atrophy part, right, then the anxiety piece starts to go down and then, you know, things start to go in the right direction. Now, like I said, it will just, you know, it's not a overnight success. It's not going to happen in a week. It's probably going to take, you know, like we said, it's going to take anywhere from, you know, 2 to 3 months for that to completely resolve itself. But it should resolve itself at some point. But this is the key. There needs to be maintenance with that estriol cream. You can't stop it because if you stop it, then that problem is just going to come roaring back. So there has to be a little frequency ongoing pretty much forever in order to maintain those tissues.
And, you know, we were talking about that microbiome of the vaginal vault. The estriol is so great for that vaginal atrophy and, also for that urethra and for urinary tract infections. But a lot of times there's so many things on the market right now. So she might have mentioned here, you know, lube does not help. So, you know, a lubrication or a vaginal, you know, using lubrication is much different than a vaginal moisturizer. So, you know, lubrication is supposed to help with friction, where a vaginal moisturizer is more than likely going to have some hyaluronic acid in there, and that's supposed to help pull water into the cell. So now if you're looking the difference between, you know, lube and vaginal moisturizers, you might even find vaginal moisturizers like online or at the store, and it'll call it a moisturizer, but really it's a lubricant. So if you are looking for using a vaginal moisturizer, which is nice for a postmenopausal female, it helps bring in that hydration without possibly using any kind of hormone replacement. You want to make sure that it's actually a moisturizer. But in this case here, it definitely sounds like, which I see all the time, is, you know, those vaginal tissues, you know, they just really get very thin. The resiliency isn't there. The atrophy is there. That more than likely, you know, having Hannah use an estriol, she would probably have a lot more benefit. But then at the same time, you know, using a lubricant, we all need to use a lubricant with intercourse, and then possibly a vaginal moisturizer, but not enough to really disrupt that vaginal microbiome.
Right. In this situation, a moisturizer or lubricant isn't necessarily enough. It needs to be done on that hormonal level. And then those other things can be really helpful in actually being able to participate in the intimate activity that you want. But it, you know, the missing component is adding those hormones back in. This one is sort of surprising to me just because it seems so commonplace for you and I, but why is this such a challenging issue for women to deal with? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
You know, it's probably, your GP, your gynecologist just really can't be the jack of all trades. They might be working more with conventional medications, big box medications, which is pretty much estriol. Now we're in, the United States. Estriol is usually found at a compounding pharmacy. So you have to have a prescriber or a practitioner prescribe the estriol for you from a compounding pharmacy. Now I know that we have a lot of listeners that are from all over the world, and I've heard from some, in the UK that are saying they can get it from a chemist or a pharmacist, that they don't need a prescription. So I know every country is a little different, but I know here in the United States, it just might be difficult for someone like Hannah because she's going to her gynecologist who is dealing with having babies and dealing with surgeries that, it's hard to be, like I said, the jack of all trades, or her GP who may not have any idea about hormone replacement.
Yeah. Well, you and I almost exclusively use compounding pharmacies. So for those women who are out there dealing with something like this, look up a local compounding pharmacy in your area, because every compounding pharmacy is going to have a vaginal cream, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to have a vaginal cream, an estriol vaginal cream, and an estriol face cream. The secret is that they're both the same cream. So you can get a little bit extra quantity, and you can use the face cream every night, use the vaginal cream, a few times a week, 1 to 3 times a week. Eventually, a little bit more frequent in the beginning. And this problem, I wouldn't say that it takes care of itself, but Hannah seems like a much more severe case than most. Sometimes, or most often, it's just a fairly mild discomfort or a mild, I wouldn't call it irritation, but like you said, that's enough to sort of deter a woman from not wanting to have any intimacy with her partner.
Mm-hmm. So this is, like I was saying at the very beginning of this video or this podcast, that, for Hannah, this is her issue. She's had, she has a particular situation where she's getting chronic urinary tract infections. She's having the vaginal atrophy. She's having, lack of arousal with stimulation. Now that is one case. Now, granted, it is pretty common. Everybody is different. There might be, other women that are having, intense hot flashes and night sweats, other women that are having brain fog, other women that are having weight gain. There's so many different things when it comes into the aspect of menopause. It's honestly not just about hot flashes. So that's why it's so cool as we, go on and with our other podcasts too and with our other videos, that we'll go on to talk about everybody's question, because we love that everybody is writing into us so we can actually see kind of real menopausal cases, or actually you guys can listen and hear about real menopausal cases.
Yeah. And for some of them, I've been both been doing this for 20 years. We've been doing this for a very long time. There's not too many things that we haven't seen. Now, granted, it's not perfect every time. It's, when you're dealing with humans, you're dealing with people. As you say, every case is a little bit different. Every case has its own challenges. Some are fairly easy to solve. Some are more challenging to solve, but there's always something that can be done. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you're using something or using some kind of prescription or tool or whatever your treatment regimen is, and it's not working, then you sort of need to take a step back a little bit and try something different. And that's why I think she's reaching out, because she's tried a few things. That's all she's been given and it's not working. It should not. What did she say? She's using something for years. One of the creams she's been using for years with no improvement. It should not take 2 years. Within 2 years, it should be like she never had the problem in the first place. Should take months, weeks to months, not years. If it's taking longer than, even 3 months with no improvement, then that, honestly, even sooner than that, that treatment approach needs to be reevaluated and you probably scrapped for something different. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree. And as physicians too, like you said, we've been doing this for a long time. It is, when you're working with women, you've got to ask about those perimenopause and menopausal symptoms, especially when it comes to that vaginal atrophy.
Yeah. So for those of you that are new to the podcast, we appreciate you. If you're here for the first time, I know everyone does this. So I'm just going to, if you would like to subscribe to the channel, we're trying to get to our first 1,000 subscribers as quickly as we can. That would be very much appreciated. If you have any questions, we had talked about comments on the YouTube channel. I'm not sure, you know, the best way to get your podcast, to get your answer read on the podcast, go to our website, enter your name and email, ask your question there. Those are the ones we're just trying to streamline where those questions, we have plenty to do already, but we're trying to streamline where those questions come from so we can get them out in a timely fashion. And honestly, it gives us so much content to post up here that is coming directly from the people that are listening from listening to us.
If you have an issue, trust me, so many other people have the same exact issue, so we can help everyone. And one cool thing about on our website is you can put in the detail. So we love the detail. If you're on some hormone replacement and you know the dose, or you're not exactly sure, just write whatever is on your, you know, on your little prescription bottle. I'll be able to figure it out. Same with, you know, with Hannah here. She was able to tell us, you know, Premarin, Prempro, that she's what percentage estradiol she had been taking. So I know in those comments on YouTube that, you know, you really can't write a lot. We love the verbosity. So put as many words as you want to.
As a disclaimer, though, as we're getting towards the end of the podcast, this is not intended to be medical advice. Everyone that comes here has their own prescribers, their own physicians. We are just trying to educate women. We have found that it's easier to educate women about their own situations than educate doctors, right? Because doctors tend to not want to change very much. So why not just go to who needs the help the most, educate women. Now they can go back and educate their own doctors. We find that to be a little bit of a little bit easier path. And then that way everyone listening gets the information that they want so they can make the most informed decisions for themselves. So, do you have anything else to add for Hannah's situation? I think we covered it pretty well.
No, I think it was great. Thank you, Hannah. We do change everybody's name. I know I say that all the time, but we do.
You know, at first, I didn't agree with it, but now, you know, that we're doing this, it creates like a hypothetical situation by changing their name. I think it's a good idea. Just keeps a little extra level of anonymity there. This is personal stuff that you know, people wouldn't want other people to know about themselves. So not in every case. This one is a little bit unique in that respect. But until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.